Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Octopulse, our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. I'm Mark Faulkner, Detroit News Assistant Sports Editor, joined by Ted Colfin, our Red Wings beat reporter. Coming up on the podcast, we'll hear from Plymouth's Kirsten Sims, who will find out tomorrow if she's won the Patty Kazmir Memorial Award as the nation's number one, the best women's hockey player. But first, Ted, last night, Dylan Larkin's return. The captain is back with a two-goal performance in front of another sold-out, raucous crowd, a 6-3 win over the Islanders at LCA, and now a 3-point lead on the Capitals in the battle for that second wild card spot. Now, before the game, Ken Daniels said on the Jeff Merrick podcast that it was the most important game in the 7-year history of Little Caesars Arena, the most important game in Steve Yzerman's tenure, now in year 5, our 5th year of the podcast, by the way. In fact, this is podcast number 100. What did you make of Larkin's triumphant return, Ted? And what about the significance of last night's game against the Islanders, who are now 5 points back of the Wings?
Well, you were there too, Mark. I mean, it certainly energized the building. I don't think there's any question about it. Energized the lineup. I thought they played one of their best games, obviously, in recent weeks. That's 5 really good periods they've strung together now. And suddenly, just with 2 victories and nobody else really taking charge below them, they have a little bit of a cushion now heading into this weekend, heading into this 5-game road trip. I tell you what, Mark, if their lineup is healthy and at full strength, I think we've talked about it for a few weeks now, it's a lot of depth, a lot of people who can score goals. You wonder about the goaltending, I mean, but James Reimer in there now, he's battling. He's prone for the, you know, to give up a softie, about one softie every game, but boy, he does battle in there, and he's got the veteran experience. It's going to be an interesting several weeks here, race to the finish line.
Last night's game also marked the second straight game for Simon Edvinsson in the lineup. The 6'6 defenseman from Sweden was super steady, 1940 of ice time, getting the 3rd assist on a nice little pass in his own zone to Michael Rasmussen, who led the rush up ice, and eventually the game-winning goal by Andrew Kopp, one of Kopp's 2 goals against the Islanders. Here's what GM Steve Yzerman had to say at the trade deadline about Edvinsson's improvement in Grand Rapids this year.
You know, part of Simon being there was to run a power play, playing more offensive situations. And he has played in that, and I think he is more comfortable on the blue line on the power play. But ultimately, I say I'll go and watch him, and he's really an excellent defender. He's gotten more confidence. His closing of plays, his play in front of his own net, reading the play and when to box out and when to front, and you know, reading the play in front of him but knowing where everybody is behind him. Just his overall defensive play has gotten better, and is it with experience and confidence? But he really is becoming an excellent defender. But our thought was, the one I'm playing a lot of minutes and touching the puck and playing on the power play. But as I watch, I think, you know, and that's probably the most important thing for a defender, is to be able to play defense. He's really increased in that, or improved in that area. So overall, I think he's been really, really good and worked at it. And it's going to benefit him going forward.
So there you have Steve Yzerman on the benefits of Simon Edvinsson learning the game in Grand Rapids. Edvinsson more comfortable, he said, closing plays, reading the play. But how about the defense in general now, Ted? Last night, Moritz Seider and Ben Sherratt, they were both +3. They both had 4 hits. Sherratt made that play out of the corner in a 1-1 game. The game on the line, a perfect pass to Christian Fisher. Fisher took the shot and Kopp scored on the rebound. Seider again was a tower of strength, especially in these last 3 home games against the Sabres, Blue Jackets, and Islanders. He's +7 with the season on the line, 3 games, 4 points. And of course, there's the depth behind Seider and Sherratt with Jeff Petrie, Olli Maatta, Shane Gostisbehere, and Justin Hall may get back in the lineup during this upcoming 5-game road trip. So defensively, Ted, the team is still +7 in goal differential, and despite that 7-game losing streak, this group of defensemen might be a playoff-caliber defense. They're better than most teams, though, aren't they?
I would tend to agree, and especially, yeah, you're right. The way Edvinson is playing, he seems it's kind of seamlessly has entered the lineup and done a good job in these two games. Gives him another weapon. But yeah, you bring, yeah, once Jake Walman is healthy, you do kind of wonder who's going to be taken out. I mean, like you said, there's a lot of depth. Sider's really stepped up his game, I felt, the last several weeks. This is a good, it's, you're right. I mean, it's, is it Stanley Cup caliber? I don't think so. But is it playoff caliber? Oh, I would definitely think that. I think you're right. I think there's, this group is better than a lot of teams out there, maybe even better than certain playoff teams. So, yeah, I wouldn't call it an embarrassment of riches, but there are a lot of NHL caliber defensemen there in that lineup. And we've kind of known that right from the start. I mean, he's, you know, when people like Jeff Petrie or Justin Hole or Shane Gostisbehere have been scratched during the course of the season, and these are good NHL players. So that's a sign right there.
Coming up, we'll talk about the Wings goaltending, the checking line, and even Christian Fisher's F-bomb last night on TV. But first, the interview segment on the podcast. Today's special guest is Kirsten Sims. Joining us now is Kirsten Sims, a Plymouth native who played in the Little Caesars hockey program, a sophomore forward with the defending NCAA champion Wisconsin Badgers, and a finalist for the top women's hockey award, which will be announced Saturday at 12:30 p.m. on the Hockey Network. Kirsten, welcome to the podcast, and let's begin with your local hockey background. Growing up here in Plymouth, the former home of the OHL Plymouth Whalers and now the home of the men's national team development program, what do you remember most, Kirsten, about playing hockey? You've talked about your older brother, Billy, being your role model.
Obviously, he's like 3 years older than me, so he's kind of who got me into hockey when I was little. I mean, I saw him playing, and whatever he did, I kind of wanted to do. And I was just like, oh, like the next thing, everything he was doing, like that's just what I wanted to do. So it kind of got me into hockey, and then I just fell in love with it from the first couple of days skating and stuff. And from there on out, it just became a huge passion of mine, and I've kind of given everything to it and stuff. So throughout the years, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing that stuck with me is just having that older brother figure and getting to look up to him. And he's the reason that I've kind of gotten into the sport.
Kirsten, how about that Little Caesars hockey program? And Honeybaked, too, you played there as well. What do you tell friends and teammates about the coaches like Manon Riom, Tom and Jordan Frigioni are there now? Jordan was an earlier podcast guest. And Melissa Chanel, who I was introduced to in the press box up at Little Caesars Arena, she coached one of your U19 teams and now plays for Minnesota in the PWHL. What about the structure here in Michigan?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, there's so many talented girls on every single team, and every organization honestly has such a great program, and they all do very well within the nation and just within Michigan. But definitely the two that I played for, Caesars and Honeybaked, definitely have stuck with me throughout the years. I mean, I finished my last 2 years of high school at home, one with Honeybaked, one with Caesars, and they're both just incredible years. From the coaches from Honeybaked and my teammates there and stuff, was obviously an amazing experience. Then Caesars was kind of just what felt like home for me, because that's kind of where I started my girls hockey journey when I was in eighth grade. And so just getting to go back there and kind of play with people I had grown up with my whole life was just super special to me. And then obviously the coaching staff was just unbelievable. I mean, very relatable coaches, and they're kind of easy to talk to, especially having like Jordan and Melissa was super nice just because they've had those college experience and you could kind of relate to them. So it was a cool learning experience to get to kind of learn and get close with them and understand what was coming next when it got into the college time.
So Kirsten, here at the Detroit News, we're researching a story on why there's no Division I women's hockey programs in Michigan. You've probably been asked this question before. And Kendall Coyne Schofield said, quoting Kendall, she said, when you look at just the history and the success of the sport in the state, which you just mentioned, it's mind-boggling, she said, that there isn't a Division I women's program right now. Her husband, Michael, by the way, played football at Michigan. So how important would that be, Kirsten, for future female hockey players to stay in state? And why did you wind up at Wisconsin?
Yeah, obviously, I think that would be huge. I mean, like she said, it's very mind-boggling that they haven't done it yet, especially with how amazing programs they have and how they have other sports teams that are obviously very successful there. But as well as there's just so many girl hockey players in Michigan that I can tell you right now, a bunch of those younger girls playing youth hockey would absolutely love to stay at home and play on one of those schools, especially with how big they are. So I think that would be an amazing thing to be added eventually, and just would be great for the girls' game to continue growing, especially because I always say that Michigan's kind of like a Minnesota. It's just another big hockey state, especially for girls. And so I think it would be awesome to get a college D1 college team going there. And it's kind of sad that they haven't done that yet, but hopefully that'll happen eventually. And then obviously landing in Wisconsin, I mean, it's been my dream school since I was a little kid. Like, I remember when I was 6 years old talking to my dad, and I was like, this is where I want to be. Like, this is where I want to go to school. There was just, and I was like, obviously so young then, but my dad was like, all right, well, you know what it's going to take. And I was just like, yep, like, got to do what I need to do. But then once the recruiting process started and everything, the second I stepped on campus and met the coaches and everything and just got to see the whole place, I just fell in love with it right away. And I kind of knew that's where I was pretty sold from day one with this place.
Kirsten, let's take a look at your first year in Madison. Last year, you scored the game-winning goal against Ohio State in the final of the NCAA championship. The Buckeyes, by the way, featured two local players, defenseman Riley Bregman, a podcast guest, and goalie Amanda Teal. You had 32 points in 41 games. What do you remember most, though, Kirsten, about that first year, your rookie year?
I think for me, it was just the amount of stuff I learned throughout my first year, especially from our veteran players and all the older girls, just getting to play with some incredible players like Britta Curl, Sophie Shirley, Jesse Comfer. I mean, the list goes on, but I think just I learned a lot throughout my freshman year and kind of what it takes to be at a high level and be at that college level and then some. So I think that was huge for me. And then obviously winning the national championship was obviously an amazing experience, especially with the group that we had. I mean, there's nothing better than finishing your season on that. So I just think how I grew and learned as a player in person throughout the year and then obviously finishing out on top was amazing.
Kirsten, what about your coach, Mark Johnson? He's the winningest coach in NCAA women's hockey history, 594 wins, 113 losses, 53 ties, 7 national championships, 5 Patty Kazmir Memorial Award winners. He won a national men's title in his first year back in 1977, and he scored twice in the Miracle on Ice game against the Soviet Union at the Olympics in 1980. So what makes Mark Johnson such a good coach, Kirsten?
I mean, just look at those stats right there. I think that could tell you all you need to hear. But
sure.
I mean, at the end of the day, he's just obviously very knows hockey very well, and you're going to learn something from him every single day, even if it's the littlest thing. And he's not like crazy, like he doesn't kind of like, he's not like down your throat or anything like that, but he's very like calm, cool, and collected the way he coaches. And it's nice because you can relate to him, and he's going to help you with all the little things that you need. And he just kind of is able to instill that confidence within all of his players. And he is very good at helping the younger players grow too. And kind of that's what I took from last year as well, as just getting comfortable with him and like getting to learn as much as I could last year and then continuing that relationship with him this year. And I just think overall his coaching style is just very unique in what he does, and obviously it's special and has created a lot of success. So
Kirsten, how about your international hockey experience while you've been at Wisconsin, and even back when you were with Little Caesars? You represented the U.S. at the 2022 U18 World Championships and won a silver medal, a gold medal at the 2020 U18 Worlds. What's it been like facing Canada in most of those finals? And how about the upcoming Olympic Games in 2026? The games will be in Italy and Milan, Cortina. Is that a goal of yours, the Olympics? And what's it like playing against the best players in the world?
Yeah, at the under-18s level, I mean, that's a super cool experience just because you're at such a young age and you obviously get to learn from many people. And same in like that 2020 year, just kind of getting to play with those older girls and stuff too. I got to learn a lot at a young age. And then obviously that last year kind of being more of one of the older girls on that team. I mean, it was a great experience, especially being in Wisconsin and stuff too at Le Bon. Obviously it was a super cool opportunity. So those U18 levels really, really help your development in youth hockey. And then obviously now, I mean, Olympics and all that national team stuff is definitely a huge goal of mine. So it's kind of just keep pushing forward. And I like to just be where my feet are and just do what I need to do in the moment. And then when that time comes is when I worry about it. But I just kind of keep looking at the right now and kind of what I need to do, keep putting my best foot forward and put myself in the best position to try and get and reach those goals.
Kirsten, thanks for your time so far. Just a couple of more questions. You were named the WCHA Player of the Year, the 10th player in Badgers history to earn that honor. You led the league with 47 points, 22 goals, 25 assists. And now you're one of those three finalists for the Patty Kazmir Memorial Award, along with teammate Casey O'Brien and Cornell's Izzy Daniel. You're trying to become just the second local hockey player, by the way, since 1998 to win the award in 2004. Angela Ruggiero from Harper Woods, she won the award with Harvard. Harvard, by the way, has won the most awards, 6. The Badgers are second with 5. So what are your thoughts heading into Saturday's decision on the Hockey Network? What are your thoughts, first of all, when you were nominated for this honor, one of the top 3 players in the country? And what about your thoughts about actually winning this award?
I mean, obviously, it's a huge honor to even be in the top 3, especially. I think it's awesome that I'm alongside one of my teammates and especially someone who's been my line mate pretty much this entire year. I think that just speaks volumes on Wisconsin as a program. And sure. So obviously, it's a great honor to be named in a category like that, just in the top 3, it's super special. So to win would be amazing. But at the end of the day, like, honestly, going into the weekend, that's really not what me or like Casey are really looking towards. It's more winning that national championship with the team and stuff. I guess that's really what our main focus is. Obviously, we're going to have to put a little focus into Saturday when need be. But at the end of the day, I think we're just looking forward for trying to win that national championship. But obviously, if it does go that way, it'll be a great honor and obviously a super cool experience that I'll be very grateful for. But I just think at the end of the day, we're really just focused on the Natty.
Kirsten, our female hockey guests on the podcast have included Farmington's Megan Keller, Sault Ste. Marie's Abby Rock, who went, of course, to Wisconsin, as did Birmingham's Madison Packer. In fact, Madison, actually, she's 32 now, and her path to pro hockey was longer and more difficult than, say, younger players like yourself. So what do you know about some of the women's hockey in the past? The PWHL just set an attendance record at Little Caesars here last weekend with nearly 14,000 fans. And for the first time, women are earning a living by playing in the pro game. As you know, the minimum salary is $35,000. The top stars make more than $100,000. What are your thoughts about the new league and new opportunities for women's hockey?
Obviously, it's incredible because obviously I'm younger and stuff, but still, like, throughout youth hockey and stuff, you think that college is kind of like where it's at, and obviously it still is, but just knowing now that there's a league where you're going to be making money and all you get to do is play the game that you love once you're done with college, and we get that opportunity now, is obviously incredible. And clearly, with all the attendance records being broken and just the attendance that every team's been getting every single game, I think it just shows how much girls hockey is growing, and it's just going to continue to grow as girls move on from youth hockey and girls move on from college hockey and whatever it is. I mean, I just think it's that extra push to continue to help the girls game growing, because there is that opportunity now post-college. So it's not like you're just done or you don't know what you're going to do, or you're going to have to work 2 jobs and play hockey or whatever it is. Like, now you just get to do what you love once you're done with college and make money for it.
And finally, Kirsten, some real quick questions. Why do you wear number 27?
I was 22 and 21, like, my whole life. And then I think when I was on Honeybaked, they didn't have those options. So I was like, oh, you know, you're going to switch it up. So I went to 27, but I came here and 22 wasn't available. So I was like, you know what? Let's fall back on 27. I liked it my Honeybaked year, so I've just kind of stuck with it now.
How about your favorite NHL team? Do you have a favorite team?
I'm going to have to say the Wings, but just from being a hometown Detroit fan, but I also love watching the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, that's been a favorite of mine for a while, but I think that kind of stuck when I met Minoru Ohm and stuff with Caesars and throughout the organization. I kind of fell in love with Tampa Bay in that way, but always got to stick with my hometown team.
Will the Red Wings make the playoffs this year? I'm heading to the Columbus game tonight. They're right on the edge. It's about 50-50.
I think they'll be able to make the push. It'd be huge if they could. I think it would be amazing. So I think they'll be able to do it.
How about your favorite NHL player, either on Tampa, what could have been Manon Riom, of course, or the Red Wings?
Nikita Kucherov is my favorite player to watch in the NHL.
He's a magician, isn't he? Yes.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Have you ever tried the Michigan lacrosse style goal?
No, I have not. A few of us will mess around with it in practice, and we'll see it coming or recently an opportunity at a game to maybe do it, but none of us have actually tried to do it yet.
And finally, what would it mean to win another national championship? That would be Wisconsin's 8th championship under Mark Johnson. Again, not trying to get too far ahead of ourselves. There's the Patty Kazmir Memorial Award announcement on Saturday, but you still have 2 potentially really big games to represent the Badgers.
Yeah, obviously it'd be incredible. I think our group this year is just so close and we have something special. So I think if we can pull it off, it would be an amazing opportunity and another super special end of the year. And I just think adding another one is obviously a great thing to do for a program, but I just think overall our team really, really deserves it this year. So I think we're going to really try and make that push and hope that it happens.
Kirsten, thanks again for your time today talking to us about your hockey background here in Michigan, how it sounds like only a matter of time before there's a women's collegiate hockey program in the state. And of course, talking to us about this powerhouse Wisconsin program back in the Final Four, the Frozen Four. Best of luck this weekend. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks again.
Our thanks again to Kirsten Sims. And now let's hear from Steve Yzerman again. Here he is talking about the importance of depth and how successful teams in the past few years somehow find a way to win without superstar players like Connor McDavid.
The plan isn't to avoid getting a superstar. Whatever your definition or our definition of a superstar is, but not so much in Seattle, but we did take notice of their team last year. They were they were tough to play against, and they were a very entertaining team, and it was a great story. But they did have depth. Ultimately, I think, you know, when you look at Vegas won the cup last year, they had depth. They were able to acquire depth or into their lineup, and they were very effective. Every team that wins a cup you need depth. And you look at these contenders now, they're all adding pieces to give them the necessary bodies to have a long playoff run. You look at St. Louis's Stanley Cup champion team. They were a really good hockey team. Did they have arguably like a superstar if you're talking to McDavid, or they had really good players and really deep team, but they didn't have like a McDavid or a Sidney Crosby or Nathan MacKinnon, but they certainly won the Stanley Cup, and there's lots of ways to do it. You just have to have a really good team, you know, however you put it together.
So Ted, that Yzerman clip brings us to Detroit's depth players, the identity line, with Christian Fischer dropping that F-bomb last night. He was talking to Trevor Thompson. What a great captain they have in Dylan Larkin. Then a little mistaken, of course, he apologized to his mom for swearing on TV. But Fischer, Kopp, and Rasmussen, the last three home games. So against the Sabres, they were down 1-0, second period. And Fischer scored that wraparound goal, falling down, his first goal in 42 games. On that play, by the way, they were checking the big line with Tage Thompson. They were up against the Sabres' best defensive pairing, Bowen Byram and Rasmus Dahlin. Again, one of the biggest goals of the season. Kopp had two assists there. The line had seven hits plus five. And then against the Blue Jackets, Fischer did turn it over in that first period in the offensive zone, stick handling, and Werenski scored a shorthanded goal. But when it was 2-1 Columbus, the Wings had just been booed off the ice. Rasmussen and Joe Valeno hunted down the Blue Jackets' youngest and least experienced defenseman, Jake Christensen. Christensen saw them coming, wanted no part of them. He turned it over, insider shot, went into the goal, tied the game 2-2. By the way, right after Boone Jenner made a rookie play trying to score into an empty net from inside his own blue line, Kopp tied up Jenner on the faceoff, and Raymond scored, and then Kane scored in overtime. And then against the Islanders last night, and arguably the most important game of the season, the Kopp, Rasmussen, Fischer line was dominant. 7 points, 2 goals by Kopp. Fischer scored the first goal. Rasmussen had 4 shots. They were all +2. And the Bo Horvat line, the line they were up against, they were all -3. So, Ted, I just talked about those three big home games, three big-time plays. Where would the team be without this heavy forechecking line?
I mean, you said it all there. I mean, they've played well.
They really have, haven't they?
Together these two games, they've played really well. Fischer's had a call. You're right, that Fischer goal. I mean, he's that goal against Buffalo. Maybe that's the turning point of the season. Who knows? I mean, when we'll point to that. It's been a revelation, and they play simple, they play predictable, and again, like we were talking about the defense, I think that checking line right there is about as good a line as you're going to see right now. So that's another plus for this Red Wings lineup.
And finally, Ted, the goaltending heading into these five road games coming up Saturday against Nashville. The Predators set a franchise record last night with a 16-game point streak, 16 straight games. The next Tuesday in Washington, the next biggest game of the year. The Capitals are only 3 points back. Then Thursday in Carolina, Saturday in Florida. Then on April Fool's Day, April the 1st, they're in Tampa Bay, and then there'll be only 7 games remaining. I thought that James Reimer might start Saturday in Nashville, but today Derek Lalonde said that he's going to go with Alex Lyon. What do you think is most likely to happen in the next few games? Lyons Saturday against Nashville, but wouldn't you think, well, we have to see how Lyon plays, but that Tuesday right. game in Washington, that seems to be Reimer's game.
I'm not going to put any, I would think, Mark, but I'm not going to put any money on something like that. If Lyon plays well tomorrow, I could
right,
go back
yeah.
to Lyon probably. No, Reimers. Like we said earlier, he's prone to that softy, but he like Derek Lalonde always says, he does battle. I mean, you got to give him credit. He does battle. He doesn't give up. He may give up three, but he's not going to give up that fourth one. And I'll be curious to see how Alex Lyon plays tomorrow. It's been a whole week mm-hmm. off, chance to get some rest and maybe tweak some of his game. He has not looked sharp in his last several starts, but maybe he was simply overworked. Maybe this was an opportunity to get him some rest, physical and mental. I wouldn't predict, though, at this point, after this Nashville game, how it's going to look. But you still wonder. You still got Veli Huso in the background. I mean, he's getting better. Still not healthy enough, close enough even to get ready, to enter the lineup. But, mm-hmm. boy, they've kind of patched that goaltending position from start to finish with Huso, and then there was Lyon, and then it was Reimer, and I don't know if any of them have been outstanding right from start to finish, but the three of them combined have done the job, and they've gotten them to this point.
Ted, thanks again for your time today, and that'll do it for, as I mentioned earlier, our 100th episode of our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. We have all the guests listed on our webpage at DetroitNews.com. We've also restarted our Tigers Today podcast. Chris McCoskey and Tony Paul will have the next podcast next week before the season opener in Chicago on Thursday, and then another podcast before the home opener against Oakland on the following Friday, April the 5th. So lots happening, and you can follow us here, and you can find all of Ted's stories online at DetroitNews.com, as well as on our Octopulse Facebook page. Again, thanks again, everyone, for listening, rating, and reviewing these podcasts.